Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, November 12th, 2013, and I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-hosts, Lavendar and Anastasia. And I'm so happy to say that Mercury has finally gone direct. Yay! Our featured guest this evening is Penny Pierce, a gifted clairvoyant empath and a pioneer in the intuition development movement. To quote Penny, "We're leaving the information age and entering the intuition age. That means our perception is shifting and the rules of the way life functions are changing." Through her books and personal appearances, she helps people to master the art of working with the frequency principles that govern energy and awareness so that you'll be truly successful in our lightning-fast new world. She'll be talking about her newest book, Leap of Perception, The Transforming Power of Your Attention. This is going to be a good one. Penny's website is pennypierce.com, and that is spelled P-E-N-N-E-Y, P-E-I-R-C-E.com. At the top of the show, it's the Starseed News segment with Anastasia, and then we'll have a quick visit from one of our Starseed family, Ann Crawford. And her new book is called Angels on Overtime. It's available on Amazon as of today, and we are happy to empower her work and introduce her to you. We'd like to thank Chris for hosting our switchboard this evening, and you're welcome to call in with comments or questions. The number to dial is 917-889-8292, and remember to press 1 on your keypad so we know you want to come on the air. And if you like our show, we'd appreciate your support by clicking follow on our show page. Our main site, starseedhotline.com, has been coded for Starseed activation and holds a wealth of Starseed information in our vault. We also have a forum for Starseeds at starseedhotline.ning.com. And we'd like to thank Rose and Tammy for their great work and dedication on behalf of our Starseed forum. You can find us on iTunes if you'd like to download our shows to go, or you can download them right from our show page archives. If you want to contact us privately, our toll-free number is 888-881-0881. The Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings and your natal astrological chart. And the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one phone session available with Lavendar, Anastasia, or myself. Remote healing sessions for people and pets are also available with Tammy. If you have a birthday coming up, you should know when your 10 hours of power will occur by getting your solar return timing. And please allow at least 2 weeks ahead of time to make sure that you do get it in time. And then if you'd like a Stage 2 reading to interpret those energies beyond just knowing when the window is, please make sure you book that 2 months ahead because we do have a waiting list. And now I'd like to introduce Anastasia and the news, and Lavendar will be joining us in just a few minutes. Hello, Anastasia.
Good evening, Arielle. It's great to be with everybody tonight. I hope you all had a great week. Just terrific to be back for the Starseed News and our Starseed Show. I want to start out by talking. Were you going to tell me something?
You're going to tell me how much you missed me? Mercury's gone direct, and I'm just like feeling celebration about that.
You know, that is so great. I just can't tell you how it's always hard. It gets hard every time that happens, but I'm delighted.
Yeah.
And I know everybody else out there is too, so. Yeah, that's great news. Well, you know, there's just been a lot happening all across the planet, and I want to start out by talking about the sun, as we usually do. There was a solar flare that happened on the 5th of November. That's a few days back, of course, but it caused a rare event that's called a magnetic crochet, a magnetic crochet. They say that the magnetic canopy of sunspot AR 1890 erupted. Now, I've talked about that particular sunspot, but they say that it produced an intense X3 class solar flare, and there was an extreme ultraviolet flash from that flare, and that the radiation from the flare, they say, caused a huge surge in the ionization of Earth's upper atmosphere, and this led to this event, which is called a magnetic crochet. And what that is, it's a disturbance in the Earth's magnetic field caused by electrical currents flowing in the air 60 to 100 kilometers right over our heads. And unlike geomagnetic disturbances that arrive with coronal mass ejections days after a flare, a magnetic crochet occurs while the flare is in progress. And I don't know how many of you might have noticed in the last number of days, I would be interested in hearing from you, how bright the sun has been. It has been like an arc welder, a white, white light. Have you noticed that, Ariel?
Well, I
have
haven't
you been outside
actually,
and paid much attention.
We've had some cloudy days, but no, I haven't. I haven't actually been out in the sunlight for a couple of days.
Well, I'll tell you, it has really been blinding, really blinding. And so, for right now, today, they say that solar activity right now is low. It's been really active, but they say this won't last. And they say that there is a minor storm warning now. They call it a cannibal CME. Might be en route to the Earth, and NOAA analysts suspect that two coronal mass ejections propelled into space by those X-class flares have merged into a single cannibalized cloud, and they say it could deliver a glancing blow to our magnetic field on November 13th, producing minor geomagnetic storms. So high sky watchers should be alert for auroras if you live in high altitudes. And there's been some really fascinating news in science, and this came out of the New York Times. They are telling us now that the known odds of something or someone living far, far away from the Earth has suddenly improved. They say that there could be as many as 40 billion habitable Earth-sized planets in the galaxy based on brand new analysis of data from NASA's Kepler spacecraft. Now, they say that one out of every five sun-like stars in the galaxy has a planet the size of Earth circling it in what they call the Goldilocks zone, where it's not too hot and not too cold. And they're telling us now that the nearest such might be only 12 light years away, and that such a star would be visible to the naked eye. So that's not, you know, too surprising for starseeds, but isn't it great when science owns up to that? I mean, this is just, we live in such an age, the discoveries are increasing, and so rapid knowledge is expanding about space. It's really exciting. So they're admitting that there may be an Earth-like planet only 12 light years away. And also, this has been in the news, this comes from Space Daily, they say that there's been recent discoveries of three large near-Earth objects. They say that they're surprisingly large, these near-Earth asteroids, were discovered in just the last week or so. I mean, they're finding them every day. And they found a third moderately large asteroid, which also has gone undetected until the last few days. Now, they say that it can pass close enough to the Earth to be classified as potentially hazardous, but, of course, they don't expect that to be the case. Now, they said that not since 1983 has any near-Earth asteroid been found as large as the approximately 12-mile size of these three asteroids that we're talking about. So these are big, big objects that they had no idea were out there, just found them within the last 5 days.
Wow.
And there was a security cam video of meteor explosions over Slab City, California. This comes off the Slab City official website. So those of you that live near that area, did you hear about it? Did you see it? Did you read the paper? But a resident of Slab City had a video camera operating during the night, and he caught an explosion of these meteors on his camera. Now, Slab City is in the desert. But the video shows that there were two separate explosions. Now, the interesting part of this film is that it shows how bright the two flashes were. They just lit up the whole desert like it was daytime. So, anywho, that's what's going on. We've had quite a few fireballs, and that was an interesting find. These surveillance cameras and 24/7 video cameras are picking up all kinds of interesting stuff. Anyway, I'm sure everybody has heard about Super Typhoon Haiyan that went over the Philippines. There was a significant loss of life. They're still doing the counting. A real tragedy. I wasn't aware, but the Philippines just has many, many typhoons in a year. People really suffer there with really difficult weather. But one thing that's very interesting about that is that tourists that have been stranded in the Philippines are flocking to help pack relief supplies to the residents of the island community of Coron there in the Philippines. They are helping people rather than just waiting around at the airport, waiting to get out on a flight. That's just beautiful. So the tourists that are stranded are rolling up their sleeves and helping the local residents, which is beautiful. And they say that relief and goods are pouring in from the rest of the world to help the Philippines. They said there was $10 million in humanitarian aid by Australia. The UK sent money. The Canadians sent money. Norway and the United Arab Emirates has sent money. And the U.S. military has dispatched aides and troops to some of the areas of the Philippines that were hardest hit. So that's a very good thing, and I hope that the assistance and the care arrives quickly, very, very quickly. It can't really be soon enough, so that's great. Now, there's some really interesting news coming out of Oklahoma and Texas. And I'm going to start by telling you that, and maybe Lavendar's aware of this. She's not here to answer me, but in the last week or so, Oklahoma City has been experiencing earthquakes or earth tremors and been hearing large boom sounds and rattling of their windows and so on. So I don't know that there's been any comment. Some people say it's not earthquakes. They said that might be perhaps drilling or some type of other kind of work underground that might be doing this. I don't know what the discovery on that was, but this seems to be connected to some of these other stories that I'm about to tell you about, which was that there was an earthquake or a tremor in Chicago. They said that there was a tremor that occurred about 3.7, and they think that maybe that was from underground work in a quarry or something. They don't think it's an earthquake, but nevertheless, we're having across the country earthquakes, tremors of undetermined origin, as well as large booms and shaking and rattling and that sort of thing. And this came from a listener that listens to Starseed News. I want to thank you, Dawn, for sending this, because it really does correlate with the stories of Oklahoma and Chicago. And this was a story about the seventh earthquake near the Eagle Mountain Lake in North Texas that happened. They've had seven earthquakes in just the last week. And this one that I'm talking about in particular was a 2.8 magnitude quake. It centered about half a mile west of Brier, which is about 40 miles northwest of Fort Worth. And it could be felt in Oklahoma. So we have that sort of thing going on there in the Midwest with these tremors and booms and rattling of windows and so on. So if any of you Starseed have experienced this, I'd love to hear from you and get a first-person account of that. But something's definitely going on in the Midwest. And I did talk about a story that was distressing, and that was something that happened in New Mexico about the elk that had died. Do you remember me talking about that, Ariel?
Huh?
A hunter had found about 100 elk who had died on a field on a ranch, a 75,000-acre ranch. There were about 100 elk that had died. And at the time, no one knew what caused it. They did all kinds of testing and samples, and they have discovered what it was. And they say that it was a neurotoxin produced by a type of blue-green algae that developed in a pond, and that the elk were poisoned by this algae. So that is a mystery solved as to what happened to those elk there in New Mexico. Mm. And I wanted to, you know, let you know, we had discussed that before, and it was an unknown concern, but now they found what caused it. They do say that this blue-green algae grows in warm water. So New Mexico is a warm place. It may just be a natural event that has happened now and perhaps happened before. Don't know. But Somalia is expecting a rare tropical cyclone. They say that it is a slow-moving storm. It's pounding Somalia this weekend, and they say it's a very rare thing. They say that it's an unnamed tropical storm, and it's a real serious thing for them because they get less than 10 inches of rain a year, and they say that this tropical cyclone is forecasted to dump more than a year's worth of rain on this arid climate. So that's what's going on there, another typhoon-type thing, tropical cyclone in this case. And our last story tonight, very briefly, is about why late nights are bad for your immune system. You know, for years I have read and read research about people that work night shifts, that do shift work and that are up around 4 a.m. to 6 a.m. in the morning. And the statistics do show that people that are up consistently at those hours don't live quite as long as people who sleep during that time of the night. And sure enough, there's been another study now. It actually came out from the website called Science Now. But they have found that staying up late at night, and they actually say it starts much earlier than 4 a.m., they say anything from 2 a.m. until dawn is a time that is a particular stress on your body, because they say that the internal clock within our bodies is set for two 12-hour periods of light and darkness. And when this rhythm is thrown off, it throws off the immune system. So they say that they believe that the genes that set the body clock are intimately connected to certain immune cells. And so researchers are advising people to try to keep their own sleeping patterns more aligned with nature. And they suggest that we limit our exposure to artificial light at night. So that is a little bit of health news for our starseed audience. You know, you think about it, our ancestors went to bed at dark and got up at dawn or before dawn. And with our modern-day health problems, immune system problems, and inflammatory diseases, we might want to consider that maybe we're falling out of alignment with nature's cycles in our sleep. So if you're having some problems with your health, it may be a good idea to try maybe going to bed a little earlier. That may be helpful. But that is what the new that's what the new findings are showing. It was actually a very complex article. I spared you all of the maddening details. But it's connected to the T cells in the body. And they're really working on this, and they're pretty excited about these findings. And they think that this may be a way for people to get their immune system stronger by honoring the natural rhythm within the body. Don't fight it. Just go with it. They actually say that, you know, even looking at your iPhone, in the dark, sleeping with the night light on, all kinds of things like that. Even ambient light affects the melatonin and the sleep levels and all that. So we really need to kind of, when we go to sleep, make sure we're in total darkness.
Well, that's interesting.
So that is.
It makes sense with the circadian rhythms that are in the body, because certain organs will do their daily maintenance at a pre-scheduled kind of time.
Absolutely.
So,
in fact, that brings up, I just also read a study just yesterday that they're discovering that the brain actually, during deep periods of sleep, eliminates toxins. So we really do need sleep a lot more than we think we might. Some of us think we're impervious, we don't need sleep, but the body is an intricate machine, and it operates in a very wise way, and good sleep is very essential to good health. Well, that's it for tonight's news. I'm looking forward to the show.
Well, as are we, and thank you so much for keeping us up to date on what's happening. And actually, I was talking to Tammy earlier today, and she last night in Arkansas witnessed some fireballs.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know if anyone reported that, but we have, you know, first-hand witness.
Wow, Tammy. Tell her to send me an email. I'll share that next week.
Okay, that'll be fine.
You know, that's a rare thing. That's a pretty exciting thing to see.
Well, it is. You have to be outside at the right time and in the right place. So,
wow. Well,
so first witness there. So, Lavendar, are you with us?
I'm here.
Okay, great.
Is Anne here?
Yes, Anne is here, and we are going to be bringing her on in just a minute. But, Anastasia, I want to thank you so much for the Starseed News segment.
You're welcome.
Okay. All right. Well, Lavendar, I'm going to bring Anne Crawford on right now as soon as I get the microphone open. Okay. Hello, Anne. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. It's such an honor to be here.
Well, we're glad to have
you. Well, Anne, I received your book, and I have not read it completely through. I'm about halfway through it, but I love it. I love the gist of it. I think it's right. I think it's timely. And I think this ought to be a movie.
Well, I think so too. Did you notice what's on the cover, the crystalline grid?
Yes, I did.
I thought about that when you all were talking about the crystal quest last week, and Ariel said about the crystalline grid and the angels are moving the pieces around the chessboard. I said, that's my book.
Yes. Well, and today's a special day for you, 11, 12, 13. This is your launch day for Amazon, is that right?
It is. I'm having an Amazon spike today. It's the day of my book launch, and right now it's number 56 in fiction in the metaphysical genre. So I would just love it if everybody could just buy it tonight or whenever you hear this message and bring it up to number one, because our message for all starseed is so important. It's time to get it out there, time to have it in books and movies and on TV and all over the place.
Yeah. So tell us about the book and what inspired you to write it.
Well, when my husband got divorced, he sat down and he wrote a list of 40 things that he wanted in his next and last wife. And he was specific. He said things like between 5'10 and 6 feet, and I'm 5'11, blue eyes that sparkle, long, long legs. He didn't just say long legs. He said long, long, and I have a 36-inch inseam. And it was one-third physical, one-third spiritual, and one-third emotional, intellectual, like at peace with her world and all that. I was all 40 of them. And at the time he wrote that list, I was married, and I suddenly started having conversations with the universe in my bedroom, like about suddenly leaving my husband, like there was somebody better. And so when I saw his list, I said, you know, it's like a bunch of angels just calculated, well, who's all these things? Well, there's this woman in California, but she's married. Oh, well, how married? And they just started working on it behind the scenes. And so the book is just about the team of angels that every human has. And they're wise, and they're bumbling, and they're all over the map. And I just want to share what one person who happens to be one of the world's experts on communication, spirituality, and the brain said about the book. He said, bluntly put, this is the funniest, most enjoyable, and most delightfully irreverent spiritual novel I've ever read. I couldn't stop laughing. So it was fun. It was just, it's a blast.
Well, one of the things that I got tickled about was when you talked about the angels being over a blade of grass saying, grow, grow.
Right. If there's that much love over every blade of grass, what would be over all of us? And this is about what exactly is over all of us.
And what is that saying that I was thumbing through here trying to find it. There's a saying that each of the angels says to each person about being loved. Can you recite that?
Sure. Every human has an angel that whispers, thank you so much for being here. You're such a miracle. You're love in form. You're love in action. We love you. You are love. Thank you for being here. Just over and over and over.
I just thought that was so endearing to read that every few pages, because it, as you read it, it's like speaking to you like your angels are actually talking to you about it.
Right. That's what I meant to have happen. That's exactly what I wanted to have happen. That's wonderful.
So tell us a little bit about how you see this being brought maybe to the screen, or any ideas about how to position some of the characters. Are these characters going to be in another book? Are you going to go on from this with these same characters or start something new?
I think so. I think maybe Jack's kids can have their own book someday with their own angels. And I've just been so focused on today being the launch day, and all day long I've been getting emails like, please be on my radio show. Please send me your book. We handle foreign rights and all sorts of stuff. So I do feel a door is being opened, and I'm very excited.
Well, now that Mercury's direct.
Yes. I plan this that way, and also on a waxing gibbous, and I mean, I plan the day.
Right. So kind of set the stage about how heaven is set and how the characters kind of came to be the ones that you wrote about.
Well, when I write, my characters kind of take over. It's like I can have plans for my book, but the characters have very different plans. So it started with Jack and Emily, these two humans who are living at so far less than their full potential, and they're a group of angels who are assigned to them, and just angels never lose hope, but they need to have a fourth angel assigned because these two humans will eventually advance. And then, I mean, I don't want to give away the ending, but what you think is happening really isn't.
Okay. So what's the other books that you're thinking about writing next?
I have one that's almost done about a woman during the witch hunts in Scotland, and that'll probably come out next year. And I have another one, thanks to you and Ariel and Anastasia and the whole Starseed family. I have one, I call it cooking. I have one cooking about Atlantis.
Ooh!
Yeah.
That's going to be, I just chilled. That'll be good.
Yeah.
More and more people are remembering and having connections to Atlantis. I'm getting a lot of clients that have a lot of star markings in their charts, and it just speaks loudly of Atlantis. I would say that almost everyone in the past two or three weeks seems to have the markings, so it looks like Atlantis is, there's a big push happening for bringing up the memories of Atlantis and the way technology is set on the planet now. It's like we have to really be diligent about the technologies that are here and how that we're, you know, going to be able to take the consciousness and the technology and then, you know, work with it together.
Yeah.
I even had a session with someone recently who erects cell phone towers.
Wow.
And he said, I hear they're really bad for you. I said, yeah. And so that was real different for me to talk to someone that is putting up, I think, one of the worst things in the world to happen to us on the planet is cell phone towers.
Yeah, and he's waking up.
He's been waking up. He said, you know, I don't think I really want to do this job much longer. I said, really? So he's probably listening tonight because I asked him to listen tonight.
No.
And he has a birthday tomorrow, so I told him on his solar return he really needs to think really strong and hard about what he's doing with his life and put new energy, new plans, and a new job in his future. Anyway, I am so glad that you came on and shared just a little bit about your book. It's called Angels on Overtime by Ann Crawford, and you can go on Amazon. Or is there another place? Do you have another website or anything where they can get them, or do you want them to just go to Amazon?
Just go to Amazon. It's on Kindle and in print. And they're having a special on the print. It's $8.99, and the Kindle is only $6.99. And Anne has no E.
Okay.
It's Anne Crawford.
Crawford. And Anne, I hope that you join us for our Starseed Quest in the spring.
I really would
love to have you. And, of course, you have those star markings all over the place in your chart,
yeah,
but you do qualify.
I will be there.
Okay, good. So, Ariel, back to you. And thank you so much, Anne, and stay in touch, okay?
I will. Thank you so much. Blessings to everyone.
All right. Ariel, is Penny there?
Oh, she sure is. Give me a second here to get the mic open. Okay. Hello, Penny. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
Good to be here with you guys.
Well Penny, I am really excited to know more about what you do and how you position the thing called perception. So give us a little bio on yourself and when did you start waking up to your intuition?
Oh, my gosh. Officially, I would say it really started in 1977, but I would say it really was starting in high school, and it's just grown since then. I've been working with intuition and doing a lot of clairvoyance and empathic work, and I just keep getting more and more information about how things are working under the surface of the world.
Yeah.
You know, and then how that's translating back out into the physical world.
Well, you know, in 1977, I had a huge awakening with George Van Tassel, you know, walking out at Giant Rock, and it changed my world in 1977. So I know 77 was a very big year for a lot of us on the planet.
You know, it
I
was.
We
I hear that all the time. I'm not sure what happened astrologically or anything then, but it seems like it really was.
Well, I think somebody just, you know, pulled the trigger on us. So, okay, let's talk a little bit about this book that you have. It's called Leap of Perception. And let's talk about how this can help people focus their energies and make changes in their life.
Okay. Did you have a specific question on it?
Opening up for you.
Maybe I should give you a little background on I think that this is the third book that in a trilogy that I've written six books now, but the Intuitive Way was the first book, and then Frequency, Personal Vibration came a few years ago, and now this one, the Leap of Perception, Transforming Power of Your Attention. When I finished it, I realized that it was a third book about transformation and that the three books actually went together. So it's been a progression over the years of understanding, you know, how we're making this real shift that it is transformation and what, you know, what's going to happen, how does it happen, where are we headed, what's it going to feel like, you know, what might the new reality be like after we get there. So I've been trying to describe that process in great detail in these series of books. So this latest one is really about the shift out of old perception into what I've been calling new perception, or from linear thinking or linear perception and cause and effect thinking into spherical and holographic thinking, which is a whole different kind of inner geometry of the way we see reality. And when that inner geometry shifts, literally, I mean, your identity will change and reality will change, because when perception changes, everything changes. And so the whole book is really about how that change is happening. But then also, after we make the shift, I've outlined, I think, 9 chapters of specific attention skills that we'll be using in that intuition age that's coming now, I think, after the information age. And we're right on the cusp of that right now, I think.
So how does your information come to you?
I just get it directly suddenly insights and understanding about the way something works. It comes to me in large patterns. I put my attention on something, and then suddenly I get a download about the way something works. And I think my job is kind of to be a translator from really abstract conceptual patterns of knowledge into things that are very understandable and doable, so that we can, you know, have a roadmap to get there.
So do you think there's a reason the material that you're writing about is showing up at this particular time when we're in the midst of dramatic global change?
Well, I think that we're in the midst of dramatic global change because the frequency on the planet has increased so much. And it is because of that very thing also that we're able to understand, for instance, that we are energy beings. You know, before, not too long ago, we didn't even know that. You know, we were just physical beings separated by empty space. And then as the frequency on the planet increased, we started to see, oh my gosh, everything's vibrating. You know, we're all made of energy, and we're connected in a sea of energy, and there really aren't any lines between things except where you place them with your attention. And then, you know, as you start to understand the frequency of things, then you realize that your attention is what creates you know, realities. It allows realities to come into form and to go out of form. So how do you use your attention skillfully? And I think that is sort of the kind of knowledge that we're heading into now as we're increasing our own frequency. So,
yes,
and
I
then
agree.
I think that
many
you know,
years ago when I was living in Cripple Creek, Colorado, I had this one phrase that came to me. It's called, you are what you're conscious of. So I wrote it up, and then I made lots of copies of it, and I just started pasting it in all the rooms. Wherever I looked, I would see that phrase, because I knew that whatever I was focusing my attention on, I was going to get more of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of an experiment that I put myself through. But you're right. It's like whatever you focus your attention on, this is the perception of what will be happening to you. I can certainly attest to that.
Yes, it's what brings things into form. And when you take your attention out of something or don't invest in it, with attention you invest attention, you know. When you pull attention out, the thing fades back into the unified field.
Right.
So, you know, it's a pretty simple process. But the whole change that we're going through has a lot to do with time changing, really. It's like we're all coming into the present moment now. Everything's so fast that it's right in the moment. We're in the moment. Everything's in the moment. And the future is no longer separate from us. So the past is not separate on a line. It's not on a timeline anymore. Each memory, each thing, whether it's, no matter what time it's in, it's inside a sphere of your reality in your field, your personal field, at different frequencies. And all you have to do is adjust your frequency, and then you can be in that reality.
Right.
It's not a cause and effect.
Quite a bit about fragmented attention, distraction, attention deficit. And do you think some of this is caused by technology today?
Oh, yeah, I do. I think that part of it is, as the frequency increases, it disturbs our bodies quite a bit, and we tend to get pretty jumpy. And, you know, so we have symptoms like ADD, ADHD. We get hyperactive, and we get let's jump out of our body and get involved in something that doesn't reek of emotional pain. You know, so let's go get the next dopamine hit from our cell phones, you know. And I think that we've become addicted, in a way, to screens and to this kind of immediate connection to people wherever they are and information wherever it is, so that it's like it is kind of almost like a Pavlov's dogs, you know, we're just getting a hit every time we make a connection. So,
yeah,
yeah,
I'm noticing more and more people are texting. I don't personally text, but I see a lot stories about people texting and driving and walking and texting and having accidents, and it's like, what has taken over people's brain where they can't pay attention to what's going on around them? And, you know, driving a car and texting, I mean, who would have think to even do that?
I know. I know. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've been in a coffee shop or something and seen the parents sitting there texting and not talking to each other, and then they have a child sitting next to them that's getting more and more and more restless because nobody's paying any attention to the child. And they're just sitting there having to put up with these distracted parents. You know, you just wonder what they're going to feel like when they get older.
Oh, goodness.
But,
oh, wow.
You know?
Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of talk today about neuroscience and the brain. And how does what you're saying fit into this new area of study?
Well, I think that with neuroscience, the whole idea here is that, you know, of course, the old idea is that you were born with so many brain cells and then they started dying off and, you know, you would be a doddering old fool at the end of your life because you wouldn't have any brain cells left. But now it's really been shown that we regenerate and that the brain can regenerate itself just through attention, actually, on things, so that we can change old ingrained patterns of beliefs, of behavior, and grow new pathways and open up new parts of the brain, that we're very, very unlimited in that regard, you know. So in terms of changing out of old perception into new perception, this is very hopeful because we can leave those old fear-based habits that we've been in, you know, and that slow kind of plodding, proof-oriented way of being. And there's nothing wrong with proof. We need it for science, but we shouldn't let the left brain dominate everything we do, you know, because it really doesn't really have a connection with the soul. It's in the past. It's coming off of reaction, what used to work, you know, and it's not in the present moment dealing with what's happening.
Do you think that it has something to do with maybe the bloodlines and the memories that you may be carrying from your ancestors? Do you think the left brain is attracted to that?
Oh, that's interesting. No, I don't. I think that that the memories that you might bring in with you from your lineage are probably there because you overlapped with those souls before you were even born, that you came in through a soul group that had a similar developmental pattern that you had, that you needed to have certain things emphasized for your own growth. And that those things are very much at a higher or deeper level that the left brain doesn't have much to do with it at that point. It's that may happen way later where things get locked down and then you make beliefs about them.
Now, do you travel a lot? Do you lecture and travel and with your books?
Yes, quite a bit.
So is there some places that people can come see you? Do you have any places that you could tell us where you're going to be pretty soon?
Well, I just actually got back from 3 weeks working up in Massachusetts and Kripalu and Boston and then Baltimore.
Okay.
So I've just moved to Florida after being in Northern California for 35 years.
Goodness.
And so I'm settling in, and it looks like probably I'll be in Chicago next March, and then Norway in April.
Wow.
And maybe LA again, go back out to California and do some work. But mainly right now, I'm just trying to get settled.
Yeah. So do you do private counseling of any kind? Do you have
clients?
Yes,
I sure do. Yeah, and I do hour-long and in-person 90-minute-long private, you know, intuitive empathic sessions and coaching, intuitive coaching.
Do you have a long waiting list, or can someone get to you right away?
Pretty long waiting list right now, but only because I couldn't work this summer while I was moving.
Okay.
So there's been a bit of a backup.
Yeah.
But yeah,
so what is the website that people can go on and maybe order a session from you?
Yeah. It's just my name, pennypierce.com. And you can go to the consultations page, and under there is all the logistics and information and an application form to send to get on the waiting list.
Is there any interesting stories that you can tell us that you've written about in your book, or maybe that you've just experienced, that have to do with people that are awake, people that have had maybe extraterrestrial contact or something of high strangeness? Because a lot of the people that listen to our show, we have a lot of star people. We have people that are awake, and a lot of guests that come on our show have, you know, stories about being taken aboard ship or having, you know, abductions or contacts or anything like that. So
mm-hmm.
You're free to, I mean, we have such an open audience here. No one ever, you know, comes on our, listens to us, and we have no skeptics, really. So
mm-hmm.
Whatever it is you'd like to share that you haven't been able to share maybe with other interviews that you've had, go ahead and share it with us, because we are so ready for this information.
Well, I have had over the years many dreams where I meet with these kind of intergalactic beings. They're always like 7 feet tall, and it seems like periodically they come and realign me or do something. One time they aimed like a little, looked like a remote control or a cell phone or something at me and changed my color of my vibration. I don't know what that meant, but it changed it from one to another color and then sent me back down again. It was like I was on a little conveyor belt or elevator or something that just lifted me up onto a platform and then did the work and then sent me back down again. But about 2 years ago, I had a very, very powerful dream where I saw some very large saucer ships that had landed in something that looked kind of like Central Park in New York, and they were propped up on their edge, sort of at a 45-degree angle, all sort of sepia-colored with lots of geometric designs all over the outside. And I was walking with some other people, and I said, oh, my gosh, they're here. Look. And nobody else looked, or nobody could see them. And I was really excited, and the scene changed, and I was then in some large loft space with about 10 or 12 of these beings. And they were all dressed in sort of costumes, I would say, like they had taken on the look of various kinds of human beings. One was like a Dorothea Lange, you know, woman from the Depression era with the old baggy shirtwaist dress, and one looked like a circus MC, you know, with the top hat and tails and the shiny turquoise pants, you know. And it's like they were entertaining themselves by taking on these various, you know, human disguises.
So it was some kind of E.T. Halloween?
Yeah, it was like they were just having fun, kind of, you know. And so I was sitting on a tall stool waiting for whatever was going to happen to me, and I was the only human person there. And they, one of the men walked past me, and our auras intersected, and I just lit up. It was like this, such an intense energy that my retinas actually emitted light from inside to the outside of my eyes. You know, it's like, boom. And I thought, oh, my gosh, this is what they're actually like underneath. And then the collective voice of all the beings said, this is what you're like underneath.
Wow.
And it was always interesting. Throughout this whole dream, I would just think something, and either one, or I would say something to one of the beings, and then the whole group would answer me, like it was one consciousness. And so I went over to stand next to a wall, and the woman, one of the women, was looking at me like with X-ray vision and looking through my body, and she started wiggling her fingers out in front of her body at me, like making a little wave form. And she said telepathically, we're going to start with the middle of your body, we're going to go to the bottom part of your body, then we'll go up to the top part. And they were clearing me. And I could see they were adding energy into some old residues of patterns. I thought this was interesting. Things that I had worked on and had cleared mostly, and it was like there was this little tiny, tiny remnant left, like a little snake skin that had been shed. And it was kind of just going, you know, it's just kind of sitting there. But it still was putting out the vibe of the pain or suffering or whatever it was that it had been originally. And it was reminding me of it, and I couldn't quite get rid of it. So by adding energy to it, they allowed it to actually move out of my body. They got it moving, which I had never thought of before. So they ongoing doing all this stuff, and I could see the pictures of the past lives and what had happened that had were stuck in there. And then I said to them, why are you doing this? And they said, so you can stand in the river and heal people. And I said, I don't want to be a healer. You know, and they all said, it won't be like that. And, you know, and I could kind of see that I was in a river of energy, you know,
yeah.
That it was up to my neck and that something was going to be, I didn't know what form it would take later on, but it would be okay. It would be right for me, you know. And it went on and on. I mean, scene after scene after scene with really interesting things, and I saw all kinds of history of, you know, what I'd done in on the planet, and then I realized that we were just getting our memory back. That's what we're doing now, so many of us, is just to remember who we actually are, that we are these very high energy beings, and we're pretending that we're not. We're just like these little human, you know, children, but we really have a lot of knowledge, you know. And the odd thing then was I woke up in the middle of it. I went, oh, no, I'm not done yet. You know, I can't wake up now. But I got up and I went to get a cup of water, and I pulled off out of a coffee cup out of the pantry, and they said, look at the design on the coffee cup. This is the way we're talking to you now. We'll talk to you through everything now. It's already happening inside you. Don't worry about it. It's ongoing. So I think the next day or so, I started getting calls from friends of mine who are women healers. And one of them said, I got that I'm supposed to work on you for free. Can you come over this afternoon? You know. And then another one, somebody I met on Facebook actually, called and said, I think I'm supposed to do a reading for you or a session for you. And part of the clearing of the rest of the body started happening after that. So I'm a total believer in that level. I'm not so much involved in, you know, the fear-based level of invading ETs and, you know, that sort of thing. Because I don't like to add fear in anywhere, you know?
Yeah, true. Well, there's so many different types of experiments that are happening. And as you were talking, I don't really think it was a dream. I actually think you were aboard ship and they were actually, I think they had you in a, your soul in a, I can't pronounce this word I'm looking at. It's a container, and I've seen this happen before, what you just described,
mm-hmm.
Especially about the little gizmo that changes your color. Okay,
mm-hmm.
that's really something that happens that happens every night, every night somewhere with people
mm-hmm.
to go up. So I really think you had an encounter aboard ship. I really do.
It could have been. I do remember looking out from, and just the word loft, you know, it means high, sort of, you know, lofty. But I remember looking through the window out at the cross to the park, and I saw the ships. And they had a conveyor belt that was going like a ladder up the side of the ship, and there it was piled with little balls of transparent light, which I knew were beings. And they were rolling them up and dumping them into the ships. I said, what are they doing? And they said, we're moving them.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I thought, oh, okay, that's not bad. I knew it wasn't, you know, negative or anything, that they were being... Some people were shifting to other places.
Right. You know, it's so exciting, Penny, because we're living in a time now that, of course, you and I in 1977, you know, it kind of tells our audience kind of how old we are, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's like it was very hard to have these kind of conversations in 1977. But now it's like it's very easy to have, you know, conversations like we're having. Very, you know, easy off the tongue, easy to listen to, and people go, yeah, that sounds right on. People are so eager to have this information. I can't tell you how many emails and things that we get on Starseed Hotline wanting to know more and more and more about everything that we're connected to. And I
mm-hmm.
feel like that we have millions of light workers on the planet and star people, and we have walk-ins, we have the Pleiadians, the Arcturians, the Andromedans, and we have 33 different species that comes and goes from, I know, one ship, the Star of Bethlehem, and there's so much hope and so much energy happening now on the planet, but you wouldn't know it by watching the news, of course. No one is talking about, you know, the best kept secret.
Well, but see, here's where part of my writings come in, and I described in frequency the actual the stages of the transformation process. And a lot of it is that when the frequency of the body goes up, then all the subconscious blocks and fears that used to be able to be suppressed and denied and stored in the subconscious can't be ignored anymore, because there is no low vibration that matches those fears anymore, no place for them to hide. So they pop up into the conscious mind or to the surface, and they come into our daily life and reenact often, or collectively they'll come into the news, and we'll have politicians with scandals, you know, and pedophile priests and all that stuff coming out. And when that stuff starts coming up, the first phase of that is that people try to resuppress it, and they go into fight or flight modalities to try to control things or you know, ignore things, leave their body, get addicted to substances, you know, whatever it is, to not have to face fear. But then it just builds up more momentum, like at water behind a dam, and eventually it pops up again, but much more dramatically, and you have traumas and dramas. Until you just, like, relax and let it come through and understand what the message is that was in there that was trying to be understood the whole time, you know, that... and then as soon as you do, it dissolves, and the energy goes back into the field, and then you're clear in that area. But this is a process in the very beginning, I think, of the enlightenment process and transformation process, where we must clear fear. That's what everybody's in right now, and that's why the news looks so bad, because Pandora's box is opening, and all the little demons are flying out. You know, and then the conservatives are getting very reactive and want to try to stay in control of things, so they're squashing as much as they can, whereas the innovative people are trying to move forward as quickly as they can and create new things. So it's quite a bit of foment. Do you know what I mean? It's really moving around a lot right now and sorting. There's a lot of frequency sorting going on. And what I mean by that is, I think that, like, our friends are changing. Or go, whoa, these friends of mine, we're not on the same wavelength anymore. Well, you know, bless you, and let's move on. Or, you know, I can't stay at this job anymore because I don't seem to fit here, but I've been doing a good job. Isn't anybody appreciating me? But it's not that. It's that you've just outgrown it frequency-wise.
Yeah, I know.
And so we're being ejected.
When you're really on a spiral of energy taking you really quick and fast, the people you meet on Tuesday might not even be in your life by Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but instead of putting our attention on the negative things in the news as the world's going to hell, I think it's important to understand that stuff is that it is a process of old fears surfacing. And if you don't keep giving them attention, they will fade. And the new thing will take its place. It'll be a displacement.
True.
But if you get all upset about, oh, my God, you know, contrails or whatever, you know, or, you know, then we feed it. Because attention feeds a reality.
That's true, too. Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's not that we want to be naive and Pollyanna-ish and ignore, you know, the things that some groups are trying to do to stay in control. But to fight them is not necessarily the way to work with things. I think it's better to eclipse them by getting to a third point that's above the conflict.
Yeah.
And draw more people into that point with you so that the energy gets drawn out of the old realities and they fade because they just stop functioning.
Yes. Well, energy follows thought.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
so,
attention is what directs thought and energy.
Mm-hmm.
Focus of attention and maintaining attention on things. As you do maintain attention on things, the thing you are paying attention to reveals itself to you
right. In
more and more detail. You know, and you learn just by paying attention.
So when you were a young child, when you were in, say, 7, 8, 9 years old, did you have a lot of high intuition as a kid?
No. No. I grew up in the Midwest riding horses and being out in nature and drawing and being an artist and reading a lot. And I suppose I was developing my artistic abilities, and nature certainly, and animals I spent a lot of time around. So I had probably a lot of body sensitivity.
Yeah.
But I really didn't have clairvoyance until I started focusing on that in, 77, when I actually took classes to develop my clairvoyance ability, which I didn't even know I had. And then I realized I was a pretty prolific dreamer. I've written 2 books on dreams, and that I had a lot of prophetic dreams and teaching dreams. It all started opening up for me, like, all at once. And, like, oh, my God, this is I remember going home to visit my parents at one Christmas, and I was a graphic designer, I was an interior designer, I was going to do this, I was going to do that. And I finally said, okay, Mom, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to be a spiritual teacher. And she goes, great.
They were over thrilled, right?
Great.
Well, yeah. I love the way that you present your material, and I would encourage people to order your books or have a session with you. At this time, though, I'd like to bring Ariel in, and we may have some people that want to ask you some questions. We have
sure.
people that listen to us from all over the world, so I'll turn it over to you, Ariel. Penny, thank you so much for being our guest
you.
Tonight.
Well, I have a few things that I'd like to talk with you about, Penny, but in the meantime, if there are anybody that's listening and would like to call in, if you do dial 917-889-8292 and then press 1 when you're prompted, then we will know that you would like to ask a question or offer a comment. But in the meantime, Penny, I'm so completely on the same beam with you when it comes to that keeping your attention focused on what you want, what you wish to continue, and what you want to bring in. Can you boil it down into kind of a beginner step A, step B?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think part of it has to do with understanding about materializing and dematerializing realities. And I know we've all called it manifesting, and we've worked with the law of attraction, but in the new perception, there is no outside world. So you can't attract anything. You have to be it. You have to keep your attention on a certain state of being. I call that your home frequency. That would be like your soul in your body. You're like the light in a child's eyes, you know, just feeling full of yourself in the best sort of way. And when you stay in that state and saturate with it, and just keep choosing it. Now, you certainly oscillate out of it constantly, and then you have to re-choose it and get centered again and go back into it and say, this is the way I like to feel. This is my preferred state. And then your body saturates with it, your emotions and your mind, and then your whole energy field starts to radiate that vibration. And it becomes your main thing. When that starts to happen, your reality changes pretty dramatically, I have found, in that you get sudden lots of synchronicities. What you say happens very quickly. You realize really truly the power of your thought and words. Your declarative statements become amazingly powerful. And I hear people all the time speaking as though they are their left brain, you know, like, oh, I don't do that, I can't do that, you can't do that, you know, blah, 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 you know, and all the negative declarative statements that left brain likes to make. And I say, just turn those around and say the opposite. See what that would feel like if you said it just the opposite, as though, you know, like I had one woman who's, oh, I don't do public speaking. Oh, no, I'm scared of that. I can't do that. I'm shy. And so what if you said, it might be really interesting to notice what my energy was doing when I was talking with a group. I might find that the energy drew me out and I got, you know, more than I ever thought I could be. And, you know, start to turn around and kind of expand it that way. And then feel it. And then suddenly you're in a new reality, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So there's something there about the frequency that you maintain really has a lot to do with the thoughts you think, whether you complain and you're negative and victim, or you block the flow of your own energy with the kind of way the way you perceive things. You know, and there's a sense of really the positive stuff letting you. I'd say the thing I'm trying to say here is that it's important to stay in the flow, the F-L-O-W, capital F-L-O-W, where you are in the present moment and allowing the next right thing to surface in you and then engage with it, move with it. When it's done, you go into the pause. So it's not that you're moving forward in a flow, but it's more like the particle and the wave. You're here and then you blink out into the non-physical world, then you blink back in with a new set of instructions, then you blink back out, then you blink back in. And you're refreshing yourself every time you make that round trip. So, you know, there is a feeling then of this, I don't know, it's an inspirational way to live. Does that make sense, what I'm saying?
Yes, it does. It does. Now, when you teach intuition development, am I correct in that is mm-hmm. part of what you do?
Yes, yeah, part of it, sure.
Well, could you approach that the same as a introductory, you know, step one, step two?
Well, let's say I think that intuition is our normal way of perceiving. It is right brain perception. It's non-categorized. It doesn't have language. It is through the body, direct impressions. It's direct experience. And it kind of filters up through the brain and finally makes itself known in the left brain, and you have the aha, you know. But it will move in through the reptile brain and the midbrain through the senses, and just through the right brain in terms of pattern recognition and being impressed by large patterns of knowledge that you sort of grok. You don't label it. You just get it. And so there are things that allow you to stay in the open intuitive state, which is be in the present moment. Keep yourself inside your body. Stay in positive thinking, not willpower, but a sense of sort of expectancy, of receptivity, noticing what you're noticing. And then,
yeah.
Of course, trust in what you receive. That where is it coming from? It's coming from you, you know, and your soul is very trustworthy because it's connected to every other soul in the whole flow. You know, so there are many steps in it, but I think if you just relax and stop the inner dialogue and get out of language for a minute and drop in, you'll find that there's a lot that your body knows about and that you're actually aware of in each given moment. You know, and that's part of the practice, is bringing that pre-verbal or energy information up from the non-physical realms. And from just the body realm into the conscious mind.
It's almost a matter of turning up the volume, because, I mean, how many times do people say, you know, something told me not to do that, but then the left brain, we overrode it, and they did it anyway. And even from a simple thing like deciding to take a detour, and you know something told you not to do that, but you didn't pay attention to that. So you have to pay attention to that something, because you're perceiving, if I'm understanding what you're saying, you're perceiving it correctly, intuitively, and then you have to be careful that you pay attention to that and not just dismiss it and
right.
go to the familiar pattern of using the logical, analytical left brain.
Yes.
And isn't that really favoring your feminine side, regardless of your gender?
Yes. Feminine energy, the yin energy, the right brain. I think that we do have a tendency to override that. That would literally be being counterintuitive, although most people now use that term very hip, like it's a hip phrase now, to mean illogical. But it really means to override your intuition and not do what you sense. But, yeah, I think that your body gives the first sense of things to the reptile brain, the back of the neck.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean?
Well, it's like energy. Your body's aware of many things instinctively. And that energy, that information, it is energy at that state. And it rises up the spine, like Kundalini. And it comes up and it registers in the first brain in the back of the neck, the old reptile brain. And at that level, when you pick up information, it's always about fight or flight, attraction, repulsion, danger, safety. It's always kind of a binary thing. So you can, you know, like you said, you can get that first impression and say, I shouldn't take this route. But, oh, that's okay. I'll do it anyway. But your body was contracting probably at that moment, saying, don't know about this, you know. Uh-huh. And you have those subtle contractions about various things, like foods you eat, for instance. And we make ourselves go ahead and eat the thing we always eat, and maybe the body doesn't want it. So if you can listen to your intuition at that instinctive level of the reptile brain, you catch the information right away, save yourself a lot of pain, you know.
I
but if you don't catch it there, it goes up to the midbrain where it takes on a kind of sensory, and you'll get, you know, vibes, you'll get, you know, vision, you'll get the little voice, you know, the clairaudience, clairsentience, and all the inner senses will activate.
I think your connotation or your definition of reptile brain is different from what we are used to thinking of from a ET base. So could you please define that? Because I haven't really heard that term, and there's something about it that makes me want to cringe.
Well, it's not like about reptilian creator gods or something. This is the limbic section of the brain. The first, you know, very primitive brain that evolved with reptiles, literally. Then the mammalian brain is the midbrain, which has evolved after that and gave us another level of consciousness and sensitivity. And then, of course, the neocortex is on top of that, which has the left and right hemispheres. So we have three levels of our brain. Right,
and what you're referring to is a reptile brain is just a totally instinctive,
totally
level. Okay, yeah,
has no logic, has no language. It's very body oriented. It's very smell oriented. You know, it's instinctive.
Okay. So it is a different definition because we. Yeah, from a galactic perspective, I wouldn't want to think that had anything to do with the way I run my life.
Well, you have a reptile brain, my dear, and it helps keep
not,
you safe.
But it's not it's not from the draconian race. It's part of the Earth evolution.
Yes, yes.
Talking about. Okay. Yeah,
absolutely.
That was the difference that I wanted to define. So, if anyone, we have a lot of people on the switchboard. If any one of you have a question or a comment, please press 1 so that we know you want to come on the air, because right now I don't see any indication of that. So, when you went through this transformation, when you say like around 1977, how did the people around you change, and did you have a new set of people that came in?
Well, I didn't go through a transformation overnight. I don't think people do. I think it's usually a fairly long-term process that's gradual. And I think that as I opened up to spiritual life and or the non-physical world, that I lived in the non-physical a lot more than I was, you know, I wasn't very attached to the physical. And although I was making a living, I was being a designer, and I was, you know, doing a lot of regular things, but my private life was very much inside. And I started getting more and more friends who were like that over the years, you know, and people I could talk to. So it built up gradually, you know, and I would say I can't tell if there was any distinctive change at any time, except when I finished writing Leap of Perception, which was, this was sort of odd, this was last fall. I typed the last word, and I burst into tears. And I just started sobbing, and absolutely no reason, just started sobbing. And a voice in my head said, "You're done." And I thought, oh, my God, maybe I'm going to die now. And then the voice said, no, no. You know, that was the left brain talking. You sort of contracted to write this series of books on transformation. And, you know, it had to take this long, you know, for the world to get to the level where these concepts could be understood. So you had to drag it out over all these years, and now this was the last book in this thing you said you would do. And I realized it wasn't a contract like I had to do it. It was more like something I said, oh, could I please do this? You know, and so I got to do it. And but as soon as I finished that, I could not see my own future at all anymore. I was like prisoner of the present moment. Yet things started unfolding, and I mean, I got ejected out of my house that I'd been renting for 25 years and had to move suddenly, and where would I go? Should I go here, there? No, 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 no. Where should I go? Florida? Oh, my God. Okay, I'm going to Florida. You know, and my body seemed to be directing everything, and it just has been that way ever since. One thing after another, and very rapidly, too. Almost like if I protest about it, it just screws everything up. If I just stay in it and just go along, it's fine. Everything works. But I would say that has been a real marker point in my own perception, my own consciousness.
I can see that I had the thought that if you're just in the moment, you're just in the present moment, which is where your power resides anyway, and in the choices that you make is where your power resides. If you take care of that, then whatever is coming is going to be exactly what you wanted or even better than you could have imagined.
Mm-hmm.
Does that seem like a fair statement?
I do think so, yes. And here's another little snippet of a story, is that when I got here and I thought I would just rent, and my mother's here, so I thought, oh, I'll just be around her for a while. I haven't seen her for a long time in my adult life, and she's healthy. Why not hang around for a while? And I thought I would rent. And then suddenly I realized, no, I think I'm going to buy a house. I've never owned a house, but I'm going to buy a house. Why am I buying a house in Florida? You know, okay, going to do it. And I started hunting for one. And all the good ones, somebody else got them before I got there. Or I found one and then it was in a floodplain, or it had termites. Or, you know, it was like, why is this not lining up and happening easily? Because usually things do, you know, nowadays happen pretty easily. And I sat down and got quiet, and my inner voice said, it's that you didn't experience all this, the phases of the move, because I drove across country in August by myself, and it was really like getting shot out of a cannon, you know, this whole shift. And so it said, go back and rerun the film strip in slow motion, and go back through every single, you know, phase of the drive, through every single person who helped you. Make a list of all the people who helped you and receive what they gave fully. So I did that. I made a list. I had 150 people on it of, you know, waitresses even, you know, at coffee shops. And I just really received it. And I got to this point suddenly where I was like, wow, I have really been well taken care of. And then I thought, I don't really need that one particular house to come make me happy. You know, I've already been taken care of, so I'm sure something will come. And I relaxed, and then I realized that I had been thinking that in order to have something manifest, that I had to have a neutrality, that I couldn't want it. And that I was thinking neutrality meant kind of apathy or not caring, like don't get invested in it, don't care too much, that sort of thing. And that was really negative neutrality. But positive neutrality was what I had just arrived at, which was being with things the way they are and being really fine with it, feeling really content, like full. You know, I am full. And the next day, the other people who had made the offer on the house I wanted fell through, and I got it. And I think it was that, you know, I wasn't fully in my own experience. I was a little ahead of myself, and the energy couldn't flow, you know. So there's always a kind of energetic reason, I think, where things get snagged or negativity seems to be happening. That when you really get all of yourself there, it just unclogs everything.
So. That's another example of letting the right brain take the lead, because when you're trying to zip up your jacket and the zipper won't move and you just keep yanking at it harder and harder, and the brain just trying to dominate and brute force it and make it happen. And sometimes you just need to back off of that, and which is what you did. The right brain took over and boom.
Yeah.
Miracle happened.
Yeah. So everything's so energetic, you know. It's just like amazing. And the left brain would like to lock it all down and say, oh, well, it's this way, and the physical world, these things operate this way, and you have to go through these logical processes, and, you know, you can and you can't, and you have to and you don't. And yet the right brain is like, oh, anything can happen. You just want it. Okay, here it is, you know. It's, you know, it's a hard habit to break, that addiction to the left brain.
Oh, it is, and it's imperative that we do.
Yeah,
so,
and it's not that it's bad, but it's become the tyrant, you know, the ego maniac boss of everything, and it's caused an epidemic of narcissism in our country, which is just unbelievable how me everybody is.
Right, right. Well, it's an out of balance situation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not about erasing the left brain, but use it for what it's good for.
Which is the implementer.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, making sure you remember everything at the grocery store and you know those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
But there has to be a balance within individuals between left and right, masculine, feminine, you know, yin and yang. And once you have that balance, then you really have the tools that you need to create any kind of reality you want.
You do. And then when you have the balance, you realize it's really a figure eight. So you have to flow back and forth and back and forth and round and back and forth between those parts of yourself, that they're all important. You know, the spirit, the non-physical, the physical, you know, the left brain, the right brain, all of that. It's not just one way. And that left brain wants to stop it and make it one way, wants a rule, you know. And then we get into suffering when we don't get that rule and we don't get that security.
Right.
But it's
right.
Really not natural.
You know, I did everything the way you're supposed to do, and how come I'm still not
uh-huh.
happy?
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you go into when you need to regroup, you just kind of get really quiet.
Yes,
and
I do. I like to get quiet or go for a walk or take a bath or take my mind off of thinking and go into something either visual or movement-oriented, or just something where the senses are very active, like smelling things in nature or something, you know. And that rejuvenates me. I get my energy back that way.
I think it's a really good system. Because sometimes you need to give yourself a time out and kind of, you know, stop that current that's coming towards you that is coming from the left brain. You can just, you know, stop it. I'll get back to you later, but I have to go over here and regroup.
Mm-hmm.
And then you come
and
out.
And a lot of it, you know, in order to get out of that left brain, you can stop the dialogue. Because remember, left brain is language oriented and right brain is not. So as soon as you can, like, stop your internal dialogue or the chit-chat in your head and talking on your cell phone and texting and reading and working with language and go into something a little deeper than that, you know, usually, I mean, if you can get into silence for a little while and stillness, really drop into that space, then you'll just expand out hugely. And as soon as you do, your vibration goes up, you know. And then you start getting soul guidance in that those kinds of states. And then that's when you do that, you reconnect with yourself, and of course you get your energy back. It's like telling the truth. And you go, oh, yeah, that's who I am. I'm back.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And I've heard it said many times, you know, laughter is the best medicine. But isn't the actually when you are laughing, your vibration frequency just shoots right up?
I think so. Yeah, I think it is an interesting consciousness state. Because I think it is like an act of shifting over from control to lack of control, which is a big change out of left brain to right brain, to let things be, to laugh at them the way they are. That's kind of like, okay, they are the way they are, and I can let it be that way and enjoy it. It was kind of moving out of control into joy. So, powerful.
I mean, everybody has those freeze frame moments in life where something, you know, unexpected happened, and it was just hilarious. And if you go back and just revisit those, and if you can even just get a chuckle, you've kind of changed the frequency right there.
Right.
You know, when
you release contraction in the body, you know.
Uh-huh.
You know, when you contract around something, you inhale, you stop the flow, and basically you go into fear. You know, try to maintain security or avoid something. And when you're in that state, you know, you don't have connection to your intuition, that's for sure. But as soon as you can laugh, it opens the whole thing up and jump starts the flow again. And I have really started thinking that pleasure is a very high state. You know, the whole idea of, well, what is entertainment? You know, today I've been rethinking the entertainment industry and working with some people who are trying to bring transformation into the film industry. And so the whole idea is, well, what is entertainment anyway? And these days it has a lot to do with distraction. Right? Let's not have to feel things. So let's get all the gun violence and the shoot 'em up movies and, you know, all these high volume, I mean, loudness volume, crashing, banging car chases,
right?
You know, with lots of film edits, bang, 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 bang all at once. And so that we'll be so overwhelmed with adrenaline that we'll never have to feel anything else. Whereas really, entertainment is that sense of playing in joy. You know, it's like just finding joy in things and the humor in things. And it's a much lighter and less intense quality that's
mm-hmm.
going on. It's often much, often even more, a little more intellectual. You know, so. Pleasure.
Lavender, are you speaking? I thought I heard some crosstalk or something. I thought maybe you were trying to break in, but
wasn't me.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have my favorite memories of just laughter when your cheeks hurt the next day because you laughed so
mm-hmm.
hard. You
mm-hmm.
know, those are such precious memories, and they really hold. Like a unending well. You can go right back there and just bring yourself to chuckle, and that can be enough to pivot when you're trying to break that hold of the left brain. Or something else that is completely pleasurable. And I know sometimes chocolate does that for me, but we joke about chocolate a lot because I know that I don't know anybody that doesn't like chocolate. But it actually chemically stimulates some pleasure center in the brain. And and we're very grateful to the Pleiadians for bringing it here from the Pleiades. I am. Well, Penny, is there anything else that you would like to add or say to our audience before we wrap it up?
Oh, gosh. I just am very hopeful.
Covered a lot of ground.
You know, I have a very positive view about what's happening, and I think that we will move into the new perception, you know, gradually at our own speed, that it is dawning on us, that as soon as we hear it described, we go, oh, yeah, I know that. I remember that. I know what that's like. Okay, and now we're going to learn how to do it and stay in it. And the more of us who do that, the more of a kind of a, you know, a base we have to draw other people into it with us. So I think it's important these days to be a thought leader. You know, to if you feel like a misfit, don't identify with that. Instead, think of yourself as a leader, because you have to stand out in order to influence people. You know, instead of standing out to be wrong.
Right, and that's all just someone else's perception that they're trying to, you know, cover you up with.
Exactly.
And really, it is your perception where your power truly lies.
That's right. And there's an art form to it all, too, to make the new ideas seem really interesting and like a leading-edge thing that people would be curious about rather than scared of.
Right.
Because we've got to get rid of
fear.
You
have positive, you have, you know, so many positive storylines that you've even just shared with us tonight on how things just worked and you overcame certain things with this method, and truly what you pay attention to and how you perceive is really what's important, and what others perceive of you really doesn't matter.
Well, it's for them. What they perceive of someone else is really who they think they are. You know. So
right, right. Yeah, well, then you get into
you
the
tell
whole
a lot about people
judgment
from
thing. Mm-hmm. And that's just completely a dead end there, judgment and fear. So everybody, keep your attention on things that make you feel good.
Right, right. Yeah, and, you know, people can get hold of me on my website, which is just my name, pennypierce.com. And I will be getting swinging back into action here soon as I get settled and be back at it again. So, but I've had a little bit of a backup until, you know, just getting through these changes this year.
Right. Well, you're coming into the most, you know, beautiful time in Florida as far as the
it's gorgeous
weather
here now. Yes, yeah, I'm enjoying it very much.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole new thing to discover.
It is. I lived in Florida for a long time.
Oh, you did?
So,
oh, great.
Yeah, East Coast, West Coast, Key West, just about all over, at least for a couple of weeks anyway when I was touring. It is a very laid-back. Are you East Coast or West Coast?
Well, mainly West Coast for the last 35 years.
I mean of Florida.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. No, on East Coast.
Well, that was my favorite. I used to live in Jupiter, Florida, and I just got such a big kick out of when people say, "Oh, where are you from?" At Jupiter. yeah, that was fun for a while. But I'm glad to be where I am, and I'm so happy that you were able to spend some time with us this evening. And once again, the website is pennypierce.com, and Penny is spelled P-E-N-N-E-Y, and Pierce is P-E-I-R-C-E. So the book is Leap of Perception, and it is available on your website as well as
through Amazon and everywhere pretty much.
Okay,
it's still
great.
Out in hardback, and it's also in audio form as well.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Well, you have a lot of book titles that when I saw the book titles and the synopses of the content, I knew that you were on it, and we're just so glad you were able to spend this time with our audience.
Well, thank you both for having me on it. I appreciate it.
You're so welcome. Lavendar, do you have anything you would like to interject before we close?
Just to remind everyone that the Pleiadian lineup's coming, and it will be the 15th through the 20th, and we have a lot of incoming spaceships that will be in the area all over the world. So, you know, look to the skies. You know, look to the skies. That's my theme for right now, because I know we've got a lot of incoming.
And next week on our radio show, it will be still Pleiadian lineup, so we'll talk more about that next week.
Okay.
All right. Well, Penny Pierce, thank you so much for joining us here.
Thank you so much again.
Oh, you're welcome. And from all of us here at Starseed Radio Academy, have a great week. Have a wonderful Pleiadian lineup, and we'll be back next week on Pleiadian lineup. Until then, take care. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.